So last week we started a new series. If you're here, we're looking at this study through the book of Jonah. And if you weren't here, let me kind of recap what we talked about, especially if you don't know the story. I'm guessing most of us know the story, but God told this guy named Jonah, who was a Hebrew prophet, who was living probably in the area of Samaria at the time. We'll actually put a map up here. God told this guy named Jonah to go preach or to call out or to cry out to the people of Nineveh. After all, that's his job. He's a prophet. That's what prophets do. But the beginning of the book of Jonah tells us that Jonah didn't want to do that. In fact, he ran in the other direction. And so he went down to this city called Joppa, which wasn't even in the nation of Israel. And he got on a boat because it was a port city. And the boat was headed for a town called Tarshish, which was practically on the other side of the world. It was 2,500 miles away. And the obvious questions that came out of the story were first of all, why in the world did Jonah run away from God? Because the story doesn't actually tell us. It just tells us he ran away. And I suggested last week that it's probably because Jonah didn't want to go to Nineveh. Because Nineveh was the capital of Assyria at the time. And the Assyrian Empire was like the arch enemies of Israel. And so Jonah couldn't stand the people of Nineveh. Jonah couldn't, all he could associate with like violence and brutality and wickedness with the people of Nineveh. And Jonah couldn't understand how God would have 1 ounce of concern for the people of Nineveh. And he didn't have 1 ounce of concern for them. In fact, he hated them. And so he probably ran in the other direction as a result. And yet, maybe even the more interesting question is this. Why did Jonah think he could run away from God? I mean, what good did he think it would do for him, right? Did he think that there wouldn't be any consequences for his running? Did he think that he could go to a place where he wouldn't hear God anymore, where he could just put his hands over his ears and not hear from God anymore? And it's interesting because I think we do the same thing in our own lives. I mean, I think God nudges us all the time to do things. And there's often times when God nudges us to do something and we just don't want to do it. Like Jonah, like we don't see eye to eye with God. It's just something I don't want to do. And we'll ignore God in the same way, or we'll put our hands over our ears, or we'll go to our own Tarshish. Maybe it's not an actual city of Tarshish, but we all have our way of escaping from God. Like we have our forms of escape. But like Jonah, do we think that we can simply ignore him? And do we think there won't be any consequences? I think we do. We think there's just not really any consequences. Like, I can just ignore him. It's no big deal. There's not a lot of ramifications. It's kind of like flossing your teeth, right? We all know we should floss, but how many times do we choose to floss? Like, you know, the floss is sitting there. You brush your teeth. And it's like, I could floss, but I don't really want to. I'd rather just leave. And what are the consequences of not flossing for one day, right? Or 1 week, or 1 month, or if you're Dan, a few years, right? Like, what are the consequences of not flossing your teeth? Like, we tend to think there aren't any consequences. We know what's best for our lives, and so we just go on our way. Dan's giving me mean looks now, and he's going to get me back next time he preaches. But we're just not going to let him preach anymore. But we think there's no consequences, and that's what Jonah thought. We think we can just sort of take our lives in our own hands and do what we think is best, and we know what's best, right? But for Jonah, we're going to see how that worked out for him tonight, because he gets on a ship, and he's bound for Tarshish. And we just read a few verses, the beginning of the story last week, but tonight we're going to see what happens when he gets on the ship and he heads out into the Mediterranean Sea. So here's what I want to do. We're going to read through a bunch of verses together. And again, a lot of us probably know this story already. If you grew up in church, if you didn't grow up in church, or you didn't grow up in a religious atmosphere, you're actually at an advantage. Like, that's a good thing, because you'll be reading this story with fresh eyes. But for a lot of us who maybe have heard the story before, you're going to kind of know what already happened. But I want to show you some things tonight that are maybe new or fresh. You're going to see some things, because there's some fascinating literary things going on in the story that tell us a little more about this guy named Jonah and a bunch more about these other characters that are introduced to us. So I want to point out some of those things. And then along the way, I also want to point out a few key things about really the main character in the story. And that's God. This guy named Yahweh. That's what the Hebrews called him. So I'm going to keep it super simple. As we go along, I'm going to point out 3 key things that we see about God from the story. And at the very end, I want to challenge us all with a really big challenge. So let's jump in. Jonah's on a ship to Tarshish, starting in chapter 1, verse 4. And as I read, I'm going to be reading a word-for-word translation directly from the Hebrew. So it might be a little different than your Bibles, but we're going to put it on the screen so you can follow along. This is what it says. But Yahweh hurled a great wind to the sea, and a great storm was in the sea, and the ship was on the verge of breaking up. And the sailors feared, and each one cried out to his own God, saying, "Help me, Oprah. Save me, Dr. Phil." No, they didn't say that. They hurled cargo containers, which were in the ship, into the sea to lighten the load from on them. But Jonah had gone down into the depth of the ship, and he had laid down, and he was in a deep sleep. And the captain came near to him, and he said, "What are you doing in a deep sleep? Get up, call on your God. Perhaps your God will take notice of us, and we will not perish." Now let me point out a few things. This huge storm comes up on the ship, and it's tossing, and it's churning. And so the sailors begin to realize this isn't just any storm. Like, this could be the storm that's the end of the road for them. Now, these sailors are probably not Israelites. As I said before, Joppa was not in the nation of Israel. So, and because of some other things we learn in the story, we know that these sailors probably were not Israelites. They were probably Philistines, or they were Canaanites. But they were people from a foreign nation, and they probably worshipped different gods. And the way it worked back then is most people were polytheistic. They worshipped many gods. They would often have a personal god that they would worship that they thought, almost like a guardian angel, but it was a guardian god that they thought would take care of them in their lives. And then their family might have a god that they would worship. And then their clan might have a god. And then their nation might have a god. So they had all these different gods. And whenever something would go wrong in your life, you would think it must be because I've offended one of my gods. And so you'd start going through the list and doing everything you could to appease the different gods. You start with the personal and then, you know, the clan gods and the family, and you try to appease the gods. And so when the ship starts tossing and turning and this huge storm comes up, they begin calling out to their gods. But they don't just call out and they don't just pray. They feel like they need to do something as well. So they actually start throwing all this cargo overboard because the ship is weighed down with this cargo. It's probably headed to Tarshish to trade. And so it has all this cargo. And when it's weighed down, that means it's really low in the water. And so as the waves get bigger and things get messier, it looks dangerous, as if, you know, any wave could come crash over and turn the ship over. And so the easiest thing to do is start getting rid of stuff to lighten the load so that the ship goes higher. And so they're lightening the load. And you can almost imagine the captain. He's running around. He's got everyone doing everything they can. And he's running down in the cargo hold and grabbing stuff and bringing it out. And he runs down and he grabs a box. And behind it, there's this guy who's sound asleep. And it strikes him as so, how in the world could somebody be sound asleep in the midst of the storm? It's odd. Maybe something's almost wrong with this guy. And so he wakes Jonah up, and he grabs him, and he shakes him, and he says, "Kum, kara," which are the Hebrew words that mean get up and call out to your God. Perhaps your God will take notice of us. Interesting choice of words. Because God had said to Jonah, "Kum, kara," get up and call out or cry out to the people of Nineveh. In fact, I love what one biblical scholar wrote about this. He said, Jonah must have thought he was having a nightmare. These were the very words with which God had disturbed his pleasant life a few days before. The irony gets even thicker because the captain goes on to say, "Perhaps your God, Jonah, will take notice of us and we won't perish or we won't be destroyed." Little does the captain know, this is exactly why Jonah is running away from Yahweh, because Yahweh had taken notice of Nineveh. And Jonah knew that when Yahweh takes notice of something, perhaps that means the people of Nineveh won't be destroyed. But that's what Jonah actually wanted to happen. He wanted them to perish. He wanted them to be destroyed. And so he runs away from God as a result. Now, before we move on, I want to point out something that I think is crucial, or maybe I'll just ask the question, why are they in a storm? How does this storm begin? Who is the cause of this storm? Does the story tell us?
Yahweh.
Whisper, Yahweh. Margie's over here whispering. I don't know if that's for dramatic effect, but it's Yahweh. Yeah. It's God. Which leads to, I think, a truth that we learn about God that at times can be really, really comforting and at times really discomforting. And it's this. God is sovereign. God is sovereign. And sometimes he uses storms to get our attention. You see, God is sovereign. That word sovereign just means he's in control of everything. And we see here, he's in control of the wind. He's in control of the waves. He's in control of the storm. He makes this storm happen. He's sovereign over everything. Which raises a huge theological question. Am I saying that God causes all of the storms in our lives? Not just the real, like, physical hail and rain and, you know, those kind of storms, but is this story suggesting that God causes all of the difficulties, all of the trials, all of the hardships that we face, all the things that feel like a terrible storm? Does God cause all of those? The answer is maybe. Sometimes. In fact, I think there's maybe three reasons we can give for the storms in our lives. The first reason that we have storms is oftentimes because we make really foolish decisions. Or someone else makes really foolish decisions. And we experience the direct results of that through a storm in our life. That sometimes the things we do or the things that other people do cause storms directly in our lives. That's the first reason we experience storms. The second reason is kind of the unexplainable category. You just can't explain it. You see people go through difficult things, and it seems to clearly have nothing to do with something they did or something someone else did. Someone comes down with a disease, and it's not because they've lived an unhealthy life, and it's not because they've mistreated their body. It's just happened, and we can't explain it. Are those horrible things that happen to really good people, and there's just no way to explain it. And in those situations, like Job, who's another character from the Old Testament, we simply cry out to God. And we say, God, this isn't fair. God, this doesn't seem right. Why is this happening? God, I need you to rescue me from this. So sometimes it's foolish decisions. Sometimes it's unexplainable. We don't know. But if Jonah's story is true, sometimes we have storms in our lives because God puts them there. And that maybe seems harsh, but I actually think it's because he's loving and because he's caring. Because what could be more loving and caring than seeing someone you love or care for headed in the wrong direction, heading towards self-destruction, heading almost over a cliff? What could be more loving or caring than putting a storm in their path to try to block their way, to try to get them to actually turn their lives around? And so God does that sometimes. He puts storms in our lives for that very purpose. Now, the hard thing is we don't always know the difference. So we go through storms, and it's hard to say, like, is this because of something I've done, God? Is this one of those unexplainable things? It has nothing to do with what I've done? Or are you trying to send a message to me? And we don't know. And so all we can say oftentimes when storms happen in our lives is it doesn't matter whether God caused it or whether he permitted it, he is still sovereign. And more than anything else, he can save me from the storm. He wants to use this storm for me to call out to him and cry out to him and beg for his mercy and his rescue and his salvation. And that's what he does in Jonah's life here, because he's sovereign and he's using the storm to get Jonah's attention. But unfortunately, it doesn't look like Jonah calls out to God at this point in the story. In fact, as far as we can tell, Jonah is silent. Even when the captain comes and says, call out to your God, Jonah doesn't say anything. The story goes on and says this, verse 7. And they, the sailors, said each one to the other, come and let us cast lots. That's kind of like I'm drawing straws. Let us cast lots so that we may know on whose account this trouble is to us. And they cast lots, and the lot fell on Jonah. And so they said to him, please tell us, on whose account has this trouble come to us? What is your work? And from where do you come from? What is your land? And from what people are you? You see, they know something's wrong, and they know Jonah's behind it because he drew the short straw. And so it's like they start quizzing him, like, what have you done? Did you murder someone? Are you running away from something? Like, what God have you angered to bring this on us? Tell us your story. Jonah responds. He says, he said to them, I am a Hebrew, and I fear Yahweh, God of the heavens, who made the sea and the dry land. So Jonah, at this point, he tells them who he is. He describes the God that he believes in, or the God that he worships, or the word he actually uses is the word, the God that he fears. And his name is Yahweh. And he's not just a personal God, and he's not just a family God, and he's not just a clan God, and he's not even just a national God, although you might think that. You could just picture him saying that to the sailors. You've probably heard the name Yahweh, that's Israel's God, but he's not just Israel's God. He is a God who is sovereign over everything. He's the God of the heavens. He's the God of the sea. He's the God of the dry land. He is the God who's in control. So even Jonah acknowledges this at this moment. But look at how the sailors respond in the next verse. It says this, and the men feared a great fear. I love that little phrase. It's a Hebrew way of expressing something. In Hebrew, they actually didn't have a bunch of different words. And so to make something really emphasized, they would just say the same word in verb form and in noun form. And so that's what they do here. It's kind of a way of just saying they were scared to death. And so they say they feared a great fear. And they said to him, what is this that you have done? For the men knew he was fleeing from the face of Yahweh, for he had told them. So apparently at this point, Jonah tells them the whole backstory of everything he's done. And they look at what they say back. They said to him, what should we do to you so that the sea will become calm for us? Because clearly you're the problem, Jonah. For the sea was growing more and more stormy. And he said to them, pick me up and hurl me into the sea so that the sea will become calm for you. For I know that it is on my account that this great storm has come on you. See, at this point, Jonah knows it's his fault. He's the one that's caused all this. And he feels this tremendous sense of guilt and shame and discouragement and dismay. And in fact, it's so deep. Someone mentioned this to me after the sermon this morning. They said, why didn't Jonah just jump off himself? Why did he ask them to throw him off? It's almost like he almost doesn't have any confidence or energy in even jumping off himself. Like, he's just one of those, like, the ultimate pity party at this point. I just want to die. Just throw me overboard. And the story goes on, and it says this in the next verse. Look at what they do. The men rowed hard to return to dry land. So they're not going to throw them overboard at this point. They're going to do everything they can. They rowed hard to return to dry land, but they could not, for the sea was growing more and more stormy on them. And so they called to Yahweh. And they said, oh Yahweh, please do not let us perish because of taking the life of this man. And do not put innocent blood on us, for you, Yahweh, have done that which you desired. And they picked Jonah up, and they hurled him into the sea. And the sea ceased to be angry. And the men feared a great fear toward Yahweh. And they offered a sacrifice to Yahweh. And they made vows to him. Now, let me stop there for a second and point out a few interesting things, because what's so striking about this story and this narrative is the contrast that the narrator, whoever wrote it or finally wrote this down, the contrast that the narrator is trying to paint between Jonah and these sailors. Because you see, Jonah, he's supposed to be the Hebrew prophet of God, right? And the sailors are basically, they're pagans. That's not a derogatory word. That just means they worshiped other gods. They're foreigners who worshiped other gods. Jonah is the insider, right? I mean, he has the inside track on who God is and how God works. The sailors, they're like the outsiders. They don't know who God is. They don't know how he works. They don't understand the faith of Jonah. Jonah is supposed to be the example of faith in this story. And the sailors, well, they're sailors, right? I mean, what do you think of like examples of faith when you think of like ancient sailors? No, they would have been like the farthest thing from an example of faith that you could possibly pick. And yet, when the storm comes, how do they respond? Jonah is sound asleep. The sailors are crying out to their gods for salvation. Jonah won't call out or cry out to Yahweh, even when the captain asks him. By the end of the stories, the sailors are the ones crying out or calling out to Yahweh. Jonah doesn't do anything to save the ship. And here the sailors are doing everything in the world. They're throwing cargo overboard. They're trying to row back. They're doing everything they possibly can to save the ship from breaking up. Jonah doesn't seem to have any regard for human life. I mean, he doesn't care about the sailors. He doesn't really even care about himself. By the end of the story, he's just saying, throw me overboard. He just wants to die. And yet the sailors are doing everything they can to save everyone on the ship. And throwing Jonah overboard is the very last option. They don't even want to do that. But ultimately, maybe in the greatest contrast, maybe in the greatest irony of the whole story, Jonah is the guy who's supposed to fear God. In fact, he stands up and he says, I'm a Hebrew and I fear Yahweh. But nothing in his actions in the entire story demonstrate that he fears God at all. And then you have the sailors. And it says that when the storm comes, they fear. They're afraid. And then when they find out about Yahweh and what Jonah has done, it says they feared a great fear. And then when they finally throw Jonah overboard and the sea becomes entirely calm, it says they feared a great fear toward Yahweh. Who is this Yahweh that did this? They fear this great fear before him. And then it says they offer sacrifices to him, which is a way of worshiping Yahweh. And then they make vows to him. They promise, Yahweh, we will follow you from now on. We will worship you. You are the God of everything. You see, Jonah is the insider, and yet he's entirely faithless in the whole story. And the sailors represent the epitome of outsiders. And yet by the end of the story, they hear about Yahweh. They respond to Yahweh. They experience Yahweh. They end up worshiping Yahweh and putting their faith in Yahweh. And once again, I think this reveals something not just about Jonah and not just about the sailors, but it tells us something about God himself. God's not only sovereign. He doesn't just bring storms into our lives sometimes to get our attention. But God is also relentless. He's relentless in his love for outsiders. That's the second thing we see about God in the story. You see, God called Jonah to go to the Ninevites. That's how the story begins. And who are the Ninevites? They're the ultimate outsiders. They didn't know about God and their lives are falling apart and God is concerned about them. They have taken notice in his eyes, and so he sends Jonah to the Ninevites. But Jonah's disobedient. And he runs in the opposite direction, right? And it's almost as if God says, okay, Jonah, you're going to run in the opposite direction. You're going to be entirely disobedient and not go to the outsiders that I want you to go to and take my message of love to them. Well, I can reach outsiders even in your disobedience. Because at the end of the day, here's what God wants more than anything else. He wants people whose lives are tossed and turning and lost to hear about him and his grace and his love for him. And Jonah, if you're going to run in the other direction and get on a ship for Tarshish, I can even use you to tell other people, these sailors, about me. And it's almost as if in the experience of these sailors, of hearing about Yahweh and then falling down and worshiping Yahweh and putting their faith in Him, God is reinforcing the very message and the thing that He wanted to do through Jonah to the Ninevites. And here's my question. This is where it gets personal for you and for me. Is this the God that we worship? Is this the God that we believe in? A God who's relentless in His passion for outsiders. That's not us. Who's relentless in His passion for people outside the walls of the church. You see, one day a teacher came along and he said, "Hey, you know what God is like? He's like a good shepherd who is willing to leave the 99 sheep who are safe and secure and righteous and believed all the right things and had everything going well in their life. He left them to go and pursue the one who is lost. Because that's where his heart was. It's not that he didn't like these people. He liked them, but they were safe and they were fine. Where his heart was, what his heart was broken for, was with the one that was lost on the outside. And when the good shepherd goes and finds that lost sheep, there's this huge party. His teacher says there's this party that's so great, and there's this rejoicing, and there's more rejoicing over one person who's lost, who's an outsider on the outside, turning their lives around, than the 99 who are gathered, singing and praying and talking about God. That's God's heart. Now, I'm guessing if Jonah had heard that story, he wouldn't have liked it. It would have rubbed him the wrong way. I'm guessing that's why he ran, because Jonah didn't believe that God really cared or loved the Ninevites. And so he runs in the other direction. He didn't think the Ninevites deserved God's love. He probably didn't think the sailors deserved God's love. And certainly by the end of this story, he doesn't even think he deserves God's love anymore, right? I mean, he doesn't obey God. He runs away from God. He's not even praying to God. He's not even saying he's sorry to God. In fact, he finally comes to the conclusion by the end of this story, just throw me overboard. There's nothing left for me. And honestly, as we're reading it, probably the most logical thing to happen is for the sailors to just go ahead and throw him overboard. I mean, what can you do with this guy named Jonah? His heart is about as hard as possible. There's nothing to work with there. He is about as faithless and disobedient as a prophet could ever be. And so the sailors throw him overboard. But look at how the chapter ends, verse 17. And Yahweh assigned a great fish to swallow Jonah. And Jonah was in the insides of the fish for 3 days and three nights. You see, God is sovereign. God's also relentless in His love for outsiders. But here's the third thing we learn. God is gracious. God is gracious even when we don't deserve it. Because God decides to save Jonah. God decides to give Jonah another chance. I mean, that's just what grace is. I mean, an easy definition of grace is giving someone another chance even when they don't deserve it. That's what God does with Jonah. I mean, Jonah didn't deserve it. Jonah had plenty of chances, but God decides to give him another chance. Now, these are three things we learn about God from the story: that He's sovereign, that He is relentless, and that He is gracious. And in fact, I think these three things are written all over the pages of the Old Testament. Almost every major story you read tells you that God is sovereign, He's relentless for outsiders, and He's gracious towards people who don't deserve it. But there's one other person in the Bible who fits this description as well. See, the book of Mark tells us that one day Jesus, who's a Hebrew teacher, he's with his disciples, and they're in a boat out on the Sea of Galilee. And a huge storm comes up, and it starts rocking the boat back and forth, and the people, the disciples, start thinking they're going to lose their lives, and they go underneath the boat, and they find Jesus sound asleep. Sound familiar? They wake him up and they say, Jesus, can you imagine? Why are you sound asleep? Don't you see we're all about to perish up here? And Jesus comes up and he raises his hands and he speaks. And the wind and the waves die down. And Mark tells us, he's writing in Greek, but he uses the same Hebrew phrase. He says, the disciples suddenly feared a great fear. And they looked around and they said, who is this that even the waves and the wind obey him? Who is this that is in control of the weather? Who is this that is sovereign over everything? Jesus was also relentless in his love for outsiders. I mean, that's almost all the people he hung out with. He spent time with prostitutes. He spent time that were with people who were on the margins of society. He touched the people that were ritually unclean. I mean, they were the ultimate outsiders. Gentile foreigners. He would go to them and spend people outside of the walls of the Hebrew faith. That's who Jesus loved. And he was gracious. He was gracious to people who didn't deserve it. He gave people second chances all the time. In fact, one time a woman who was caught in adultery, the very sin, like she's caught cheating on her husband. And Jesus shows her grace, gives her another chance. She didn't deserve it, but he gives her another chance. And even as he's dying on the cross, to the very men who nailed him on the cross, he says, Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. You see, the God of the Old Testament, who's sovereign, who's relentless, and who's gracious, is Jesus himself, who came to show us what God is like, who came to say, let me demonstrate to you and show you with flesh on what it looks like to be sovereign and relentless and gracious. And so here's the question that I have for you, and this is kind of the way I want to challenge you as we wrap up tonight. If you're here and you're not a Christian, maybe you wouldn't even voice that out loud, but in your heart you kind of say, yeah, I'm not there yet. Still got some questions. I'm on this journey, but I'm not there. If that's you, then here's how I would challenge you tonight. Why are you still running? What are you running from? Have you asked that question? Would you consider stopping running and throwing up your hands and saying to God, God, I feel like I've been running forever and I don't want to run anymore from you. I just want to give up. I want to surrender, because that's what it's going to take, is me kind of surrendering myself and my will and my thoughts and my desires and all that stuff, because I've just been focusing on that and I've been running forever and I don't want to do that anymore. What would it take for you today, like literally today, to just say, I'm done running. I'm going to put my faith in you. I want to be a Christian. And so whatever that means, I want to start following Jesus. I want to turn my life around. I want to do the 180 and start following Jesus. You can do that tonight. It's so easy. Come talk to me afterwards. I'll tell you what. All you have to do is basically say to God, God, I'm done running. And I'm putting my faith and trust in you. And God will just say, welcome home. Well, man, have I got amazing things in store for you. So would you consider doing that? If you're here tonight, for a lot of us, you've been a Christian maybe a long time. You've read this story. This is somewhat familiar to you. And honestly, maybe there's a lot of folks in here tonight who you would actually say, on paper, I agree with everything you said. Like, God's sovereign, he's relentless, he's gracious. Like, those were, like, none of that was very life-changing for you. Like, those were three things that you've believed and you've said and you've sung and you've prayed a lot of your life. Like, there's nothing new about those three things. If that's you, here's how I would challenge you tonight. Do you actually believe that about God? Like, do you actually show that with your life and live that out? Not just say it and not just say those words, but do you actually live your life in such a way that you believe he's sovereign and he's relentless and he's gracious? And the reason I ask that is because I read this story and I see a guy named Jonah who didn't actually believe those things. And let's not forget, Jonah was the most godly guy around. He was a Hebrew prophet. Like, he was the guy who knew God. He was the guy who read his Bible. He was at temple every Sunday. Like, he was getting A's in Sunday school. Like, he did everything. Like, he knew. The guy who was the most religious guy in the world totally missed that about God. And in Jesus' day, the people who were the most religious, the Pharisees, the most godly, who went to church, they missed it too. They didn't live this out in their lives. And so that tells me, man, if Jonah missed it and if the Pharisees missed it, then we better be careful not to miss it too. And if the most irreligious people in Jonah's day were the people who actually got it, were the people who actually called out to God, and were the people who actually trusted him in the midst of the storm and threw their lives on his mercy. And if the people in Jesus' day who were the most irreligious were the most receptive to his grace, then maybe we need to be spending more time with the people who are most irreligious and telling them about God's grace. And so here's the question that I would ask you to ask tonight as you head out and you go on your way home. If you came with somebody, I want you to talk about this in the car on the way home, or when you go to eat dinner afterwards, or if you regularly meet with a friend or a small group of people today or tomorrow or the next couple of days, I want you to ask these people a specific question. I want you to look them in the eye and ask them this: do I live my life as if God is truly sovereign over everything, relentless in his love for outsiders, and gracious towards people who don't deserve it? Do I live my life that way? Which means, do you see me trusting God in the storms of life? Do you see me as passionate and relentless about outsiders as God is? Do you see me giving people second chances who don't deserve it? I want you to talk about that. I want you to think about it. I want you to reflect on those questions deeply. And then I want you to come back next Sunday. And we'll take a look at the rest of the story. And we'll see if being in a fish for 3 days and three nights gave Jonah enough time to think about that as well. Let me pray. God, I pray that this story of Jonah would be deeply impactful for all of us. God, I pray for those in this room who may be going through storms in life right now. Pray for those who maybe don't know why they're going through a storm. They just are. That you would surround them with your love. You would let them know that you're in the storm with them. You are Emmanuel. You are God with us, even in the junk of life. God, for some of us who are maybe in a storm because we're running away, or maybe the storm isn't even here. Maybe we're just running away, like we're just trucking. God, if you would have us to turn back to you tonight, give us the courage and the boldness to do that. And if it takes laying our pride down, and if it takes surrendering to you, just break us of that will and that pride and help us to do that. Give us the faith. We don't have it. Give us the faith in you to be able to do that. God, ultimately help us to trust you and help us to have a bigger vision of this world, one that isn't about us, but that is about all the people out there who need to hear about your love. Give us a passion for them the way you have a passion for them. And in everything we do and in everything we say, ultimately, God, help us to know that we need you. We need to trust you. Help us. Help us to make that our prayer tonight. We need you, and we want to trust in you.